Intellectual Property 101 with Tushar.
Hello everyone. Welcome to this episode of Intellectual Property 101. I am Tushar Bhargav, your host and founder of Marcas, an intellectual property consultancy firm in India. In this episode, we have Mr. C.M. Lal, founding partner of Singh & Singh Lal & Sethi with us. In this episode, we will talk about copyright laws in India and their importance.
Intellectual Property 101 with Tushar.
Thank you, sir, for taking some time out from your busy schedule and coming on this podcast.
Thank you.
To begin with, can you explain to our listeners what is copyright?
Well, copyrights are works of creativity. So whatever comes from human skill and labor is largely termed as copyright. So you can look at musical works, so that means musical compositions. Of course, the most typical one is literary works, which is when you write a book. Of late in the new technologies, when you write computer software, that's covered by literary works. Then there are dramatic works and artistic works. Artistic works will cover areas such as architectural works. Mm-hmm. Dramatic works, of course, are typically, these are the four traditional copyrights. And then you come to the new technologies, which are sound recordings and cinematograph films. So it really covers six broad areas of copyright protection, which is artistic works, dramatic works, musical works, and literary works, and then sound recordings and cinematograph films.
Okay, so in order to enjoy this statutory protection, is it mandatory to register my work? Because in trademark, it is mandatory to register your brand name in order to get the statutory protection. Is this the same case in copyright?
So that's the good news for copyright owners, that because it's a work of creativity and human skill and labor, there is no mandatory or beneficial requirement for registration. As a result of us being members of the Universal Copyright Convention and the Berne Convention, it is possible to protect all works of Indian authors and works of Indian origin virtually across the globe. But the bad news is that likewise for authors abroad, all their works are protected here. That's why it becomes important when you get onto the internet, those are all works of copyright, and you can be rest assured that they are protected.
So if I don't have to mandatorily register the copyright work, why should I register it? What is the point of registering the work?
There's no real point in registering the work. Sometimes it is beneficial to put a date to the work. The biggest problem that arises in copyright is, how do you put a date? Somebody else copies your work and says, I am the author or creator of that work. So how do you put a date to that work that you created it before the other person created it? Because he would get copyright if he was the first creator. So the registration helps you get a date. A lot of corporates will register copyrights for their packaging, which is artistic work, to make sure that that date is stamped on the copyright register. Sometimes movie scripts will get registered, again, to put a date to the storyline that's set out in the script. So it's really to put a date, but there are no benefits whatsoever for enforcement for copyright registration. Sometimes it happens that if you go to a district court, for a judge who's not very familiar with the law, producing a registration certificate from a statutory authority sometimes helps in enforcement. So to that extent, there are some minor benefits for registration.
Okay. If a person wants to register their work, so what would you recommend? They should do it on their own?
It's a fairly straightforward form. You can go online. I'm sure you can download the form, and there is no procedure for, as I said, the idea of registration is putting a date. There's no real procedure for examination. There are no technicalities, unlike a patent registration or a trademark registration where there are technicalities. Here, it's basically name of the author, when was the work first published, some very basic information which you'll understand. It's reasonably easy to understand. You fill up those forms and bung them into the copyright office. And within 6 months to a year, you get a registration certificate.
Okay. Since so many educational startups are coming these days and they have a lot of content, tutorial content side and everything. So sometimes their data runs into hundreds and thousands of GBs. So what would you recommend? Like, you know, in case they want to protect their work, how should they go about it?
As I said, as soon as you create that work, you get copyrights. You know, it's copyright not only in India, but almost globally. No matter what the quantum of work is, in the digital world, you can always throw it into a pen drive and file that with the copyright office. That will give it a date to what the creation of that day was. The big danger, of course, is that if it is something secretive, then you're handing over all your trade secrets to a statutory authority from where leakages are possible. So I don't recommend your filing things such which are highly secretive. As a result, many copyright owners will not file their source code for copyright registration because source codes are highly sort of sensitive trade secrets, very difficult to sort of track them back. So if you give the whole source code to the copyright office, that's not an advisable sort of idea.
Okay. And also for the copyright laws, this Delhi University case is doing the rounds these days. So what is your take on it? What is your opinion on it?
Well, to my mind, it sort of, I think it reads into the exception of copyright rather liberally. I don't think it's a healthy trend. Of course, I have to respect it because it's coming from now an appellate court of the Delhi High Court where I practice. But my personal views are that the judgment is not the correct one. I don't think the facts of the case merited permitting a photocopier man to be photocopying an entire year's work which a student is to do year after year after year, which really becomes the curriculum. So in effect, what this man is doing is printing the curriculum, and this is not the copyright. To my understanding, the copyright exception was that during the course of teaching, if a teacher wants to, you know, photocopy a few pages which he distributes in class for purposes of teaching and facilitating that teaching is the exception. But to have an institutionalized where the Delhi University is actually making orders to the photocopier to print specific chapters from specific books and making it into a compilation and making it available to students which teachers in future year after year will use, it's probably an extreme case. Let's see how the Supreme Court deals with it. I'm sure it's going to go to the Supreme Court. But for now, it's a precedent where such an act is permissible as an exception to copyright protection. To my mind, it's somewhat destructive of the creator who creates those books. Ask the person who writes textbooks. In any case, his business model is very limited. He doesn't make a lot of money. And now if such institutionalized copying is permissible under the Copyright Act as interpreted by the court, I think it will be very destructive somewhat to creativity in the future.
But if you'll see from the student's perspective, I mean, generally the whole book, you know, there are certain text which is only important for them in the entire course. So, you know, if they have to buy the entire book, which are generally expensive, so that would cost a lot of burden on them. Don't you
think? But then how is that different from I want to only catch in a film, I only like 10 scenes. I don't want to watch a movie for 3 hours. I only like 10 scenes of 5 minutes each. I should be allowed to copy and distribute them. In a music album, I only like 5 songs out of the 500 that are on an MP3 album. I should be allowed to separate those out and sell them. In a house, I may only like 2 rooms and I should be allowed to copy those 2 rooms and reproduce them in my house because it's only 2 rooms after all out of the whole house. In the case of a book, I should be allowed to take a chapter and then reproduce many copies of it because that's the chapter that is of use to me. That's not the point. The creator gives you the whole work, and yes, it sounds very attractive to a student to purchase cheap sort of photocopies today, but don't forget that that very student, to my mind, what you've taught him is that A, education is cheap, B, there's no money in education, see that if you write a book tomorrow, somebody else can photocopy it and distribute it. So you don't have a business model. So please don't write a book. And D, all of the people, students who are going to be reading these books and reading these photocopies are going to be the future creators. What are we telling them, that these future creativities are going to be so cheaply available to third parties that you will have no business model? Anybody having a startup who wants to go into works, copyright works, a musician who writes music, a filmmaker who makes a film, a book writer who writes, an artist who draws or paints. What are we telling them, that all these and parts of these can be taken and stolen freely and distributed freely? I think it's a wrong message.
Agreed. And in your opinion, at what stage is India positioned in terms of copyright registrations and its enforcement?
It's awareness is a huge problem. I work very closely with what we call established industries, which is the film industry and the music industry. Those would be, I would say, also to some extent, the publication industry. These are very established, sort of old-time Indian industries. 15 years ago, the film industry had absolutely no concepts of contracts, had no concepts of copyrights. Actors, actresses, producers, directors would talk to each other and watch pirated films of each other and call up and congratulate each other for saying that they made a wonderful film. If you went before a magistrate for enforcement, he said, this is entertainment. Why would you want to sort of, and they were, the whole aspect was, this is a rich industry. And if a few people are stealing a little bit, what is wrong with it? That changed in the last 10 to 15 years when the music industry took a downturn for the worse because piracy became so rampant. People realized that the Indian film industry, 9 out of 10 movies were losing money. They realized that the money that was being lost was all money which was coming from Dubai and through, you know, very dubious sources. And for a legit industry to survive, if there was no respect for copyright, the legitimate industry could not survive. So the film industry was run largely on glamour and money, very dubious sources of money. Same with the music industry. Now we see corporatization. As we see corporatization, now you're seeing better scripts, you're seeing better stories. It's not an actor-dependent movie, and you're seeing different targeted audiences, which is a multiplex audience is different from a single-screen audience, an audience for the internet, an audience which is a city A audience to a city B audience. And so there are various money-making where you've got to make money out of a very limited time period of a film. In this whole thing, leakages in the form of piracy are very, very important to control. And when we compared this with Hollywood, which was making 1/8 of the number of movies, they were making 10 times the profits. Because I think in the West, copyrights are recognized as any other property, as tangible property. Even though it's intangible, it's recognized as property and respected as such. I think it's time that in a knowledge-driven economy like ours, we start respecting copyrights as an essential part of our property and an essential part of our country's GDP and an essential part of property that the nation owns. And we protect it with our lives.
So do you think that the copyright registrations will increase with the awareness in the coming years? Do you see?
As I said, it's not about registrations, it's about enforcement. Okay. And we are already seeing a huge increase in enforcement. The music industry today can't survive without enforcement. The collecting society is where if you're playing a song in a discotheque, you need to collect those monies. They have become active. The music industry is dependent on downloads and ringtones where enforcement is important. The film industry has become a sort of a multiplex industry where 2 weeks is where you got to make your money. The book publishing, you're getting it on Kindle, you're getting electronic formats, you can download it. So the lifespans have become very short. So it's very important that people recognize that the lifespan of their lifetime works to make monetary benefits out of it is very, very small, and they need to be very active with how they market, sell, and enforce and protect copyrights.
So, but then since, you know, you don't have to mandatorily register the work in order to get the statutory protection, don't you see there might be so many disputes and so much of confusion in the who is the actual author of the work, who is the actual creator of the work? Don't you think that, you know, this hampers a bit in the enforcement part?
Not really. If you look at a book, once you publish a book, it's got a date. Everybody gets hold of your book only after you publish it. Date of publication is very easy to establish. Somebody who copies it says, I created that book, where you've got your date of publication. It's obviously subsequent to that. How will he prove prior sort of adoption? Same thing with a film. Yes, if somebody copies your film while in production, that's a problem. But if somebody copies your film post-production, when it's released in theaters, you have a release date and that film is in front of everybody to see. Same with music albums. You can show when you put it up on a website. All that is trackable. Same with a house. If you built a house with an architectural work, a painting, if you publish it somewhere, if your painting gets published in a newspaper or you sort of create some evidence that it was created on date A, you have copyright on that day. So the registration doesn't really help your cause in any which way. So there's no benefit at all.
No, but for example, say you have written a book, but you're yet to publish it, but someone gets hang of it, gets hold of that book. And then he, you know, takes out certain part of your book. And you know, in case of the movie, say you have written a script and you have shown it to, say, 2-3 producers. And later on, you realize that, you know, they have copied your work. Although you have not published it, you have not registered it, or, you know, you have not done the registration part. So here, there it gets difficult to tell exactly when it was registered, when you have actually created that work.
No, so if I'm reaching out with my script to a third party, I'll make sure that I have a contract signed with a date on it, and I'll make sure he signs on every page of my script so that he acknowledges that on such and such day I gave him this script. If he copies thereafter, that's his problem. You're right, it may have a benefit where it's secretive, but a film till it's made, how do you register the film? Yes, a film script, you can register it the day it's made, it created, but then it may undergo changes. So yes, if it's absolutely critical for you to put a date, there are other ways of doing it. One of the typical techniques is to post a letter to yourself, a registered AD post, and then retaining that so that you get a date on it. So there are other ways. In a trademark situation where it's a label mark, which is also artistic work copyright, you file a trademark application and that gives a date or to it. So there's no benefit in court by a registration. No real benefit. The statute doesn't give any benefit. A non-registered work is as good as a registered work. But if you need to put a date and have a government agency put a stamp on it, and that you think can help you in a district court or where a judge doesn't understand the law, or that you need to put a date, yeah, it's not a bad idea to register it.
All right. And do you feel that copyright laws in India needs improvement to match the international standards?
No, I think our laws are virtually across all intellectual properties. Our laws are as good or as bad as any in the world. As I said, we are members of various conventions that requires us to have laws which are in line with the rest of the world. Yes, understanding that law, interpretation of that law and enforcement of that law leaves much to be desired. But I think the pace has picked up on that front. There are virtually one or two cases filed in the Delhi High Court almost every day on intellectual property. Many of them are copyright related cases. So as more and more matters go to court, more and more complicated issues get decided, the whole situation of enforcement and knowledge and awareness becomes better. I welcome people like you who are spreading awareness on the subject. It's always good for rights owners to know what their subject is, what they need to protect, how that property is. And it's necessary for enforcement agencies to know that. It's necessary for the judiciary to know that. It's necessary for the administrative network to know that. It's necessary for the governments to know that, so that they can come out with, traditional knowledge and all that issue. Those issues are sorted. So it's awareness is a very important issue in intellectual property, because you don't see the property in your hand till you recognize the law behind it and the mechanics behind it. You can't protect it.
And now coming to your personal experiences, can you please share your favorite experience related to intellectual property laws?
Well, many. In 2001, we virtually protected all the films, including Lagaan, Dil Chahta Hai, Ashoka, Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham, Monsoon Wedding. These were all films in that 1 year, 2001. So I had the opportunity of working with Aamir Khan on Lagaan and Dil Chahta Hai, with Shah Rukh Khan on Ashoka, with Meera Nair on Monsoon Wedding. It was just an amazing experience of how little the industry, which are the rights owners, who don't know anything about this subject, and how piracy was such a foregone conclusion that it would happen and there was nothing that you could do to stop it, and it was a cost of doing business. And yet I was representing, essentially I was paid by the Hollywood studios to protect their works here. And we were paid X amount of money by the Hollywood studios to protect. And when I reached out to the entire Indian film industry and said, if you contribute a similar amount, we can do twice the number of actions. And it was unbelievable, but we couldn't even collect 1 crore of rupees from the entire Bollywood industry or the entire Indian industry for anti-piracy work, where each film was costing 30 to 40 crores at that time. So they were so short-sighted to say that we will not even spend 10 lakhs on protection, because it was already lost. It was already a lost cause.
But isn't it so tragic? I mean, I believe that, because even just on the day of release, the pirated version comes out in the market, and, obviously it damages their own profit.
Yeah, so it is tragic. For Ashoka, for example, we took over the anti-piracy, and we found out that the first print came out the second day of release, and we realized that the print had already been dispatched by a courier 1 week in advance. It was a 100 rupee courier who carried these prints to one theater in somewhere in UP, which is where it leaked from. Nobody knew where that print had gone for a week. Why did the courier take a week? The courier could have easily gone to any place and got another print made. So that's how lackluster post-production sort of distribution networks were, which didn't even look into the aspect of leakage right from the source. As soon as, of course, the theaters were very, you could go and walk into a theater and make a print, but you never needed to make a print on your hand camcorder or something because you got the actual celluloid in your hand. That's how lackluster the whole aspect was, and nobody understood it. The producers only knew how to produce films. They produced to the best of their abilities, but it was not a business entity. There was no corporate entity behind it which could assist you in the other aspects. You know, a corporate entity has production, post-production, enforcement, legal, but here it was a one-man show. It was one Subhash Ghai, one sort of, you know, one producer who was spending the money. The money was dubious. Where was the money coming from? Nobody bothered what the returns were. There were no shareholders you're answerable to. So the whole thing, I think it requires a very, it's a business. Today, a UTV is running it as a profession, as a business. So it is a business. You need different avenues. That's one aspect from the owner's standpoint. Then when you went to enforce, and we did raids for K3G, we did some 600 raids for a paltry sum of 5 lakhs rupees. And they weren't happy about it. They said 600 raids, but my movie was everywhere. I said, because, you know, 600 raids is really nothing. And 600 criminal raids mean that the producer becomes the complainant. And then he'll get summoned 3 years down the line as a complainant to come and give evidence for the complaint. He can't run to 600 different jurisdictions. So the enforcement, you know, is that way difficult. So there was no planning on enforcement. The agencies took it very lightly and said, what difference does it make if its films are being copied? Then when you went to magistrates, they all got bails and said, what's the big deal if I found 10,000 CDs at that time? And somebody's go down and it's only a film and he's trying to make his money, you know, earn a living, eke out a living. So the whole sympathy was towards the pirate rather than the owner, primarily because copyrights were not treated as property. Copyrights were, you know, seen as somebody else's. It was a big bad word for the Western culture. We kept saying these are Indian films. These are not foreign films. These are Indian songs which are being copied. These are Indian books which are being copied. These are Indian authors who are suffering. You look at the state of all the writers and composers of music. They are all died as paupers. You can name a few. And then you had a Lata Mangeshkar who would not let somebody else sing for like almost 20 years. That's how you ran the business. It's not on enforcement of copyrights. It's absolutely, you know, and Amitabh Bachchan said, how dare somebody want a contract from me and enforce a contract. Lata Mangeshkar said, for 20 years, I'll sing in movies and I'll sing alone. And, you know, whether nobody else is allowed to come in. So that's how we ran the whole industry. That's how you ran a particular property. So then there was no singer other than that. There were only 5 producers that you could name who produced good movies. And there were only so many. Saregama owned almost 99% of the Indian repertoire of music. So these were just little monopolies, very sort of cottage industry type, run in a cottage industry type of way, without an understanding of the underlying works, because we really come from a culture of Guru Shishya, where knowledge is supposed to be free, copyrights are seen as knowledge. I think the current judgment also reads into that knowledge must be free. It is a guru who's teaching, and teaching you can't make money. And making money in our country is a sin. So if you're making money and you're a film producer, you're very rich, so that's a sin. So you're being sinful by making money, by making these big budget films. But the big budget film is losing money because somebody else is stealing from it. And then using that money at his 800% profit on film piracy to perpetrate further organized crime, that nobody saw.
So have you seen in last 15 years, say you're saying that, you know, it all started in 2001. So in those 15 years, have you seen any change? Any change for good?
Well, there's a huge change. The film industry is now completely corporatized. The Sonys are in, the 20th Century Foxes are today producing your films. UTV is there. Most big budget films today are under a banner of a corporate entity, so they are answerable. Likewise, the music industry has expanded beyond Saregama. There's Zee Music today, there is a T-Series, there are several others who are running it as corporate entities. The publishing industry has become corporatized, but still a long way to go, a very, very long way to go.
Okay, and also, like, you know, out of curiosity, like, would you like to share, why did you choose to specialize in intellectual property laws?
Well, it pretty much dropped in my on my lap, because my father was also a specialist in this. He was a partner at Renfrew, and So I joined him and then left his practice and started my own. That's all I knew. So it pretty much fell in my lap. I then got into a lot into copyrights, into music and films, which was very exciting, but also very dangerous. It was very sort of dealing with organized crime, and there were absolute gangsters who were chasing us down. I did that for almost over a decade. So that was fun, but also dangerous. And never looked back from there on. And from where it used to be that you guys know only three acts or four acts, and that's all you know, to realizing that nobody else could argue cases without having a specialist intellectual property lawyer. Today, there's no chance that anybody's appearing in court without a specialized intellectual property lawyer standing right by his side. On one side, but on the flip side, a lot of law has become settled. So a lot of new people are coming into the field. They feel more comfortable that they can read up. And so the mystery of intellectual property law in one area has disappeared. But from another area, it's become very sophisticated and very sort of high end.
So any advice you would like to give to our listeners who want to practice intellectual property rights?
Yeah, IP practice has many facets. So there are firms which will only do what we call intellectual property filing and prosecution work. That's good money. It's good travel. You need to get clients who will file. A lot of clients will file hundreds and thousands of patent applications. So you become more, it needs a huge setup. You'll need 100 or 200 patent agents to prosecute those patent applications. Similarly, a big client could give you, have a portfolio of maybe 1,000 trademarks. You need to file and protect them. You have to renew them every 10 years. It requires an infrastructure, which is completely different from what we recognize law to be, which is going into court. And yet there are other firms which will do a lot of enforcement work, but will not have the capability of doing prosecution work, which is filing and prosecution work, because they don't have the wherewithal of that infrastructure, that corporate infrastructure. So IP law is not sort of typical court practice. It's a large part of it is filing and prosecution. So you have to become a part of a larger firm or a larger organization with very good systems in place and contribute to those systems. So whoever wants to get into it, it may sound very glamorous. It is good money. It does have very glamorous clients. It has mostly corporate clients. That's where the money is. I know it's very, very hot in the legal industry. But it's got various facets. So do explore those facets before you jump into it, because it can be reasonably tricky and reasonably frustrating in the beginning.
Okay. Since the whole idea of this podcast is to bring awareness among the masses and make people aware of the intellectual property rights, so how do you think this can be achieved and what are your suggestions on that?
Well, the podcast is a good start. You obviously need to make sure people come online and listen to it. I think this needs education at various levels. I think corporates who have intellectual property even if they don't have intellectual property, virtually all corporates have IP, which they are not protecting. I find that most companies and their employees don't have an understanding of even their products and how their products are being copied and where they lose money. I think it requires in-house training. I think law firms should be used to come and train those people on intellectual property. I find that most corporates don't have a good IP person in-house to sort of mine into all the information that's within the corporation. Universities need a lot of assistance. The IITs should be churning out more patents than they currently are. The last I spoke to, we were amongst the first to hire somebody from the IITs, and they were shocked that a law firm had come to hire from an IIT. That was about 15, 20 years ago. And to something that has changed now, where IITs now have IP departments, but I still think there needs to be a university to student to teacher cooperation, where there should be emphasis on research and creation of intellectual properties at institutional, at levels of universities and especially technical universities, even non-technical universities. Students should be encouraged to write and do original thinking and original work creation. Which will contribute to the GDP of the country. I think that needs to be looked into quite carefully.
Do you think government is doing enough?
I think the new government, the Modi government, is definitely has understood this to be an important area. The IP policy was introduced for the first time by the government of India, which looks into various issues. That's a good move. I think the Niti Aayog is very closely looking at a knowledge-driven economy and protecting intellectual properties. The finance minister announced special reliefs for taxation on intellectual property. But it's a slow process. It is a slow process, but at the government level, I think it's a very good start at various levels where there's an attempt to change the ethos of the country, and it will take a long time, but it's a good start.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir, to sparing some time from your busy schedule and appearing on this show.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Intellectual Property 101 with Tushar.
So this was about copyright laws in India. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. In next episode, I will be talking about geographical indications. Don't forget to share this episode and subscribe to my channel for more informative episodes on intellectual property rights. If you have any query, feel free to drop me a mail at tushar@markaz.in or use hashtag AskMarkaz on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you.